Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings. Welcome to another segment, special edition of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi. We apologize for the few moments of delay. We're having some problems with our boards tonight. Interestingly enough, for whatever reason, we are still not able to actually get access to the board. So we're not able to bring you in just yet, but we're sure that in the next few minutes or so, we will have worked that out, and we'll be able to, of course, hear your calls and go into the chat room. But presently, unfortunately, we are not able to get to the actual boards for us to set up our regular ability to interact with you one-on-one. But nevertheless, we're here live in living color as usual, and, you know, we don't let too much kind of stop us, so technology tends to be what it is, and it's okay because we're going to keep it moving anyway. Again, welcome to this segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation, and before we begin tonight, as usual, we always give thanks and praises to our Creator, and certainly we are very, very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. This week, we have been bringing what we call special editions in order to focus on something that we've been working on, and it is called the Black Women's Power Forums and the Pre-Political Convention Strategy Sessions. Now, we plan to hold a major event next year called the Black Women's Power Summit. And so right now we're doing like some preliminary things in the forms of forums, and we plan to take those forums nationwide because we really want to get our sisters more involved in some of the things that we're doing. And so we believe, what would they say, take the mountain to Muhammad or something like that, but we're going to go where our sisters are. And so we want to be able to connect them directly and really do what we need to do one-on-one to build our sisterhood. So, again, we're going to begin going nationwide holding sessions for the Black Women's Power Forum, which will lead us to, of course, a major summit for next year. And along with that, we will also be doing next year and the following year something that we're calling the Black Women's Political Convention. All right, we want to really get ready to become more involved in the political arena all across the board. Again, we are not an advocate of this system in terms of, how it functions with this democracy and all of that kind of stuff, the way they do it. We all know that none of that is real, and certainly not in the way that it was initially presented because, it said all men were created equal and this and that and that and this, and they lied about all of that. So obviously whatever they were talking about in terms of their concepts of democracy certainly was not, going on, at least not for us. They must have just meant that for them. But nevertheless, we've learned to adapt, and we've learned to do what we need to do based on the circumstances. And, just like this language, we don't speak perfect English, and, most of us don't even try to or not trying to do that. But we learn to speak with one another in ways that is conducive for us. So essentially that's what we're also talking about in terms of utilizing this so-called political process. We want to utilize it in a way that's going to benefit us to a greater extent, and we can. And so we certainly plan to do that. So, again, one of our focuses in developing the Man-Woman Movement is to become more politically active. We are going to, of course, raise up the spirits and the energy of folks such as none other than Fannie Lou Hamer, none other than Ella Baker, none other than, Mother Shirley Chisholm, okay? And so, you know, again, we want to apply some of what has already been shown to us that we can do, that we should do, and certainly that we are going to do. So as we proceed on tonight, we're going to, of course, bring that to your attention that there are sisters in our contemporary time who have made some serious contributions to the development of the movement for freedom in this country. And again, we want to give them the type of honor by doing the type of work that we know we need to do. Okay, it looks like we are almost making some progress with trying to get to our boards. Yep, it seems like we have done that. We give thanks. And so with that said, maybe in about, looks like 5-10 minutes, we're going to open up the chat room. We have been able to get access to the boards. So, again, we give thanks for that. A little later on, we are going to talk with, again, Dr. Randy Short. And he has some very interesting information that he's going to share with us a little later on. But we want to also remind you that tonight's program is a tribute to Stephen Biko. You know, it was September the 12th, actually, that Stephen Biko was murdered. And each year for us here at New Day, we always make certain that we remember Stephen Biko. You know, there's a connection with what was known and what is known as apartheid that was practiced in South Africa. There is a connection in terms of the racist mentality that was so evident there and certainly was evident here. Whether we call it, enslavement or whether we call it apartheid, but now certainly many call it white supremacy. Well, it's all really the same thing. It's all really the same mindset. But I've learned to, again, phrase things a little more for us in terms of how we want to look at things today. And so we now, in our political education classes and also in the various other things that we communicate, we call the practice that we now see not just racism, but what we call attempted global off-white supremacy. Okay, and I'm going to break that down to you a little more very shortly, but that's how we phrase it. Attempted global off-white supremacy. All right, so with that said, we want to, you know, talk more about that. And again, connect those dots with South Africa. Now remember, Stephen Biko was a freedom fighter without a doubt and fought diligently to bring freedom to our people in what is known also as Zania, South Africa. And unfortunately, as with many in South Africa, they were brutally murdered, brutally tortured, and so forth and so on. Now, one of the very specific things about Stephen Biko is that he was a student, and during that time period, he was very much influenced by students that were here in the U.S. And, of course, during that time period, we're talking about people like Kwame Ture, all right? We're talking about there was a student movement, even in terms of in the South when you had students doing the freedom rides and going into the restaurants and so forth and so on. Well, we must not forget that, you know, some of that really took courage. But, again, it did inspire others. So Stephen Biko was known as the father of black consciousness in South Africa. So, again, what is so significant about that? Well, today we oftentimes have this discussion or dialogue about black and Africa and so forth and so on. And many today you hear don't want to talk about being black or don't want to, you know, associate themselves with that word or the concept? Well, they need to read Stephen Biko. They need to read some of his quotes. They need to know some of what he said. And one of the things that he made very clear, and I'm paraphrasing right now, and that is that black is a mindset, not just the color of one's skin, but it is a thinking process. And that thinking process is related to resistance. That thinking process is related to being free. Okay? So Stephen Biko clearly understood that. Stephen Biko often spoke about being black. Now, here we have a man who literally was born in the continent of Africa, but yet found it important, found it necessary to talk about being black. There's something very interesting about that and certainly very significant. So, again, we want to pay tribute to none other than Stephen Biko. Remember the work that he definitely did. Remember, of course, he gave his life to, do what was necessary in freeing the people of South Africa. And not only that, upholding principles that we all are very familiar with here in North America, known as resistance, known as the struggle for liberation. Again, we remember Stephen Biko. Okay, I thought we were going to be okay with being able to open up the chat room. So far, we still have not been able to do so. We're still having some problems with our boards tonight for some strange reason. They seem to be freezing up on us. So hopefully, we will be able to work this problem out as we proceed. Again, I'm also not able to connect to our boards in order to get your calls in. So we ask that you bear with us, and because we're definitely trying to work this out, but there are some difficulties going on tonight. Okay, what we're going to do is hopefully Dr. Randy Short will be calling in shortly, and at that point, hopefully, we'll be able to get him through. But in the meantime, what we want to do is remind you that on October 25th, which, of course, is the actual anniversary date of the historic Million Woman March, we want you to know that we are going to observe that day with a rally, a demonstration assembly in front of the Justice Department. And for those who have done a little research or study, you probably have heard or have read at some point about Malcolm X, El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, when he started a campaign that really focused on genocide. And, of course, around that time period, there was a book, there were a lot of movement, a lot of action moving towards charging the United States government with genocide. Well, we want to kind of pick up some of what happened during that time period. And, of course, there were others. Queen Mother Moore, needless to say, who was a mentor for El-Hajj Malik al-Shabazz, Malcolm X. And, again, in the 21st century, where recently, of course, there was a civil rights 50th year anniversary of civil rights. Well, of course, there was that large gathering in Washington, D.C., but also we have to now look at human rights. You know, where's the dialogue on human rights? Okay? And so we have to now realize that we've got to strive forward for that. So with that said, we want to make sure that on October the 25th, we're going to be at the Justice Department, and at that point, we charge genocide. So we want to give you more information about that. You can give us a call at area code 267-636-3802, and you can also email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com, and we'll certainly give you more information about that as well. Now, needless to say, we want to be able to have your letters and messages of endorsement for this gathering. This is when we now bring forward the Million Woman Movement, and we certainly want to do that with your support. So again, we ask that you send us your messages and your letters of support, and you can do that by emailing it to us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. Okay, moving right along, we see that Dr. Randy Short is here, and what we're going to do is go to our live line. And again, this program tonight is, of course, a tribute to Stephen Biko, who was brutally murdered in South Africa on September the 12th. And, of course, we are a few days behind, you know, that date, but certainly we are not going to forget, in fact, that he was brutally murdered as a result of being a freedom fighter. We want to also remind you that tonight's program is, too, one that focuses on black women in terms of becoming more powerful. And when I say that, we're talking about holistically and also not just for us as women, but certainly for the liberation of our people worldwide. With that said, sisters in particular, it's time for you to step up and step into place and begin to really do what we know we need to do. And we are very thankful for the brothers who give us their support and their love. And, you know, you have met many of them on this program over the past 6 years, and you will certainly begin to meet others. In fact, when we go to our live line, we're going to talk to Dr. Randy Short, who has shown that being a black man definitely means standing up for the black woman. And so we want to also talk tonight about how we need to begin to address traitors, how we need to begin to respond to those who really sell us out. That's right. We're going to be very candid and upfront about that because, sisters, you all have a very serious problem. And when I say you all, I'm talking about me in that too. I've been there as well. I'm a little more astute today, but certainly have been caught up with, you know, accepting nonsense and BS by some of our brothers. For whatever reason, we don't want to deal with the truth. Well, we're going to start. And sisters, because we now have a global sisterhood that we are building and movement, we want to deal with some accountability for ourselves as well. So you're going to hear more tonight about codes of conduct that we're going to be presenting as part of the Million Women Movement. Some of the things that as women we have done or been programmed to do over the years, and now we want to kind of not do some of those things as we proceed in the future. So with that said, stay in tune for that. We should be able to open up the chat room in a few more minutes, but right now we're going to go to our live line, and we're going to have joining us Dr. Randy Short, who is going to give us some insight into some things that have been going on in the D.C. area today, just as we talked yesterday about some of the, you know, recent occurrences that have taken place in terms of the shooting. And last night we talked about some of the correlations or some of the very similar things that we noticed that happened this past week that also happened a couple of years ago with some shootings. But at any rate, let's go to our live line. And joining us now is Dr. Randy Short. Hey, Brother Randy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, sister. How could I not be here? This
I know,
is one of
right.
the great temples of the air that allows us to share information, and we keep it real. You know, over the last 2 days, remember when we first spoke, Sister Empress Filet, the originator, take no fakes. You're not a wooden nickel, you're a gold mine, and then some. Remember I said to you, I know that this is a black guy that had something to do with this. I don't know how,
right.
but there's someone black in this one. Normally, I'm the first one to say, oh, this is some white BS. I'm going to go to sleep. Like, you know, I did that initial when the space shuttle blew up in 86. And I said, you know what,
right.
I have a black astronaut. Damn, I got to stay up and watch this. So, and it was a black astronaut on here. I was, you know, otherwise I was going to go to sleep. I remember the day I was, it was like snowy and I was sleepy. Shoot, I mean, the way they blew us up at MOVE, I said, shoot, why not an airline for them or something? But anyway, I just knew in my spirit that there was something that was not right about this. And I believe that this man was a targeted individual, but one of the things I said, and I stand on it, I said to people that this man is not an African American. He is not a person that's been here a long time. This is one of these recent families that's come over here, and a lot of these, you know, folks want to deny that there's an African-American people, and that's not true. There actually is a history. There is a culture. Each of us have our own particularities, if you can understand what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
And I just told folks that this brother is, I thought was, because of the name, I was saying Haitian. I definitely, you heard me say that last night. I believe this brother is not from the, not. I put my life on it. Come shoot me in my head. But I know that this was not one of the blacks from the United States that's been here a couple hundred years because of how
right.
the news was shaped. Normally when it's a black person that's been in the country a long time, they know about his mom and his grandfather, and they pull up the whole thing and tell you where the family lives and all of that. When it is an African or Caribbean, for blacks in Latin America, they don't give you that much information because there's not many people here from their family typically. On top
right.
of that, because these folks believe in American deceptionalism, and that's what I call it, they don't want to show that someone in their family failed because failure, in their mind, is due to African Americans. We're the failures. They're the successful black people. They're told by white folks, and they believe it themselves. And yet, back in their countries, they're failures. And when you send them to Europe where there's no African-Americans to wage a 400-year struggle for them to have rights, they're failures to just go to England. They're in jail. They're on drugs. They're just as dysfunctional. They're more dysfunctional than we are here with their language, history, pride, and all that stuff uninterrupted like ours. Think about that. How we're pretty strong. We destroyed people's cultural base for 400 years, and we're still standing. And you take someone to move them from Lagos to London, and they're selling drugs, shooting people within a generation. Who's stronger? So there's some psychological and spiritual strength that's unique to the African-American tradition that we have to be honest
yeah.
about. Now, I got a call from one of my friends. He's on the line. In fact, do you see a phone number that says 1200 at the last
Not yet. I do not. We had a little problem with our boards tonight, but so far I'm not seeing it.
Okay, because the brother that looks just like my dad, who lives up in New York, when he called me tonight, I told him, you tell me, because I know I'm right, that brother is a foreigner. Now, which country? If he's not from Haiti, tell me which one he's from. And he says, well, he's not from Haiti, but you're right. He's from Trinidad. I know the family well. So we were the first
wow.
news medium to put out that this was not an African American. And see, this is a game that foreign black people play with us. They don't want to be in solidarity many times to achieve justice. They want the fruits and the benefits, but they don't want the struggle. Okay, they see that as for us. All these affirmative action jobs, everything would not have come without the struggle of people already here. It's the same way. If I go to South Africa and get a job, it's the struggle of the black South African that allows me to have anything. Who cares whether I'm educated or smart? If white Afrikaners and English and others didn't want me to have anything. Do you get what I'm trying to say? People got shot down for some of these snooty African Americans to travel to other places and have nice positions. I've seen that too. But we have this tradition throughout the diaspora of disrespecting each other's struggles and each other's culture, and it comes home to roost and haunt us sometimes. In this case, the chicken came home to roost because I know this kid was taught he was better than. And yet he couldn't always be better than. And isn't that interesting? When Colin Powell does something, they're quick to let you know he's Jamaican. Now, Colin Powell had a son here on crack in Washington, D.C. I can assure you, you didn't hear about that. You do know about the successful one that looked like the cockroach up there with the ugly white wife that looks like you can make it with Play-Doh. Actually, don't make any more of that with Play-Doh. That's the kind of wife he had. I'm serious. She looked so bad, I couldn't even hold my tray and look at her. I'd turn it sideways. I mean, it's a trip being a butler. I mean, I've lived that movie. Anyway, I mean, I'm just being honest. When Caribbeans achieve something, they're very quick to tell you that they're different from blacks here. When they're mass killers, like Jim Brown and the Shower Posse, that killed hundreds, if not thousands, of people in this country, no one said they were Jamaican. They were cast as African-American. And we are shameful as a people to not be able to say, I love the diaspora, I love Africa, but at the same time, you got to be somebody. And I have beef with people in AARP about this. I don't care, because you got to be something. When you just say you're an African, go to Africa and say you're just an African. They won't buy
it. Right.
So why is it something about us that's so disposable that everybody else gets to be? You know who else says that? White supremacists say it. So a whole bunch of folks who call themselves radical, denying any history, any connection, or anything here, they think just like a Nazi, a neo-Nazi, or a crypto, a paleo-Nazi. You've got some kind of history. It means something. It's a short span in the overall history of African people, but it's shaped us. Not to discount Male, Songhai, Kanem Borno, Manabatopa, Chokwe, and all these other kingdoms, Aksum, we know all that, Nubia, and if you don't know, you should look it up. But what does knowing about all the pyramids in places like Uganda and places we're not even told they are, knowing about that's wonderful, but does it allow us right here in this country to have economic, social, and political power to resist the oppression we have? The answer is, if it motivates us to do those things, yes. If it's just saying, wow, I have an identity that's not here, so I don't have to do anything anymore, then that's counterproductive. Mm-hmm. And you have to ask yourself why Slavic studies and Judaic studies and Germanic studies and Slavic studies create nationalism, movements for freedom, and why Afrocentrism and a range of other things has not created the societal infrastructure for us to get these devils off our back. I'm not knocking learning how to read hieroglyphs or whatever. I mean, of course, I'm Hellenized. I don't know how to, but the Nether, I forget the Egyptian word for it. But the point is, knowing how to do that, if it doesn't translate to the fact that in my city here in D.C., 40% or more black men can't read, and you're happy about being able to read hieroglyphs, and yet you haven't been able to motivate your sisters and brothers to be able to master reading the metro bus so they know how to get to their job, we've got a disconnect. So the shooter, like I said, I told y'all, he was a foreign black person, first generation. They can't cope.
Right.
You need to learn the history of the African American. You know, you got supporters in your audience of foreign born. You need to know what's gone on here to be able to make it here. It's the same way when black folks, I had a sister or associate, student at Howard University, couldn't wait to go to Africa, Africa, the motherland, which is true. She was so into going to Africa, Africa's natural, Africa's home, she didn't take any malaria medicine. She came back, and she died. Young woman on fire for Africa, dropped dead from malaria because I'm not dealing with the reality and the culture of people on the ground in Africa, because I want my little silly, emotional, irrational, illegible knowledge to count against the reality of people there who've been dying and trying to avoid getting malaria for millennia or more. Can you imagine someone coming back dying because they didn't think that, you know, they know about the Vivax, the different types of malaria. There's a certain type of malaria that black people have a little bit of immunity to. Well, apparently the wrong mosquito bit her, the kind that killed you.
Right.
In her mind, Africa, without recognizing that there's a reality and there's a particularity to each of us, and that's what makes us wonderful. And our particularity doesn't need to be a thing that divides us, but gets us to understand and learn. Just maybe I can get something from the Jamaican. Those blacks who come from a society where blacks are the majority look at things very differently from black folks who are in a society within the minority. Let's learn some of that, but they should also learn some of ours. Do you get where I'm coming from? And then you really begin to have some Pan-African dialogue when I value, hey, you've been able to take this garbage for 400 years off these pebbles? Because Colin Ferguson couldn't. And a whole bunch of them, they cracked up all over this country, and nobody wanted to talk about it. In fact, the reason the military is not saying nothing is because they've got all these mercenary contractors from Uganda, from Djibouti, from Kenya, from Tanzania, Uganda, Senegal. They've got folk from all over Africa now fighting the U.S. Army to get citizenship. What if they renege on paying them or don't give them their GI Bill? Or if they don't get any medical benefits, just maybe they won't be able to believe in American deceptionism anymore. Or should I say American exceptionalism for them will become American deceptionalism like it already is for we African Americans. And you know what's different about black folks with this Martin Luther King thing where someone can slap you up and down a flight of steps and you pray for them? In the old world, it's blood for blood. You slap me, I stab you. And that applies across the board. That's how the Italians are. That's how the Africans are. You do something to me, I do something to you. That's been smashed in a lot of African Americans, but these folks have come from over there who think that they're better than us. When they find out that they're just niggas, just like a virtual video off of BET with some degenerate like Lil Wayne or Jay-Z in it, they can't handle that. They can't handle that. And God forbid they have a white woman with them and they still getting treated like they're black. They really can't handle it. So, you know, who you telling? And this is why the government's not bringing it up. They're happy to make it look as if it's a whole bunch because they can use this to have white folks wanting to hurt African-American people to find another way to take freedoms away. And by the way, he heard voices. They're probably saying, I'm not a black American. I'm not a black American. But nobody was listening but him. You know what I'm saying? This dude could have been, you know, on Reverend Pinckney, I was just talking to him, a whole lot of black people. Remember there was a guy named Thurgood or something like that. He was in Germany, and they did an experiment on this brother, and they broke him down, and they never bring – I can't remember his name, but it came on 60 Minutes. It was a TV movie, and then all that information disappeared. They were trying to find a way to get inside the minds of black servicemen to make them kill and do things, and this man couldn't do it. Remember him? He was this bright guy. He's an honor student. There's a movie. You know, they have a way in this society of making information disappear. And people who remember or read or study look like we're crazy because we can't always prove it. And some of our people are so, pardon my language, goddamn stupid and so arrogant, so nobody among them knows anything, and they need to get approval from the very folks who are killing them. If one among them knew the truth, because they can't prove, even with the mountain of evidence, you know how you have a mountain of evidence, Empress, Sister Empress, and people won't listen to you, and they'll take the word of a white person. And then when they get dogs, they come back and ask you to bail them out. You know what my deal is. I usually repeat back to somebody what they said to me. I tell them, you know, it's a free country. And you know, America's the greatest country in the world. I say all that garbage back to them because they were too stupid and too arrogant and too self-hating to take my love, respect, and my desire to keep them from being hurt. Why waste my time? And I start singing patriotic songs from the mountain to the valley. You know, and then they start screaming, that's the kind of Negro you are. I'm going to wave a flag on you. Shoot, I feel like buying some fireworks. You know, to show people when you're ignorant like that, there's a price for it. So you know, that's one thing. Now, I have to tell you, tonight I was in the company, although I avoided it, of Reverend Al Sharpton. You know, well, I wasn't too close. I kept moving wherever he was. I moved in the other direction. He don't look good, Lord. He's, you know how you have the, have you ever seen gloves made out of pig skin or turkey skin gloves? I mean, if you know, if that brother would have croaked and we could get some of that skin off his neck, you'd have a nice pair of boots or something. And just the whole leather looking, I said, what's up with that? That boy got more lines in his face than AT&T got extensions, but I don't know. He's now typically the black up there praising everybody and preaching, and then he left. And I was just thinking, you know, I liked him better when he was fat in a jumpsuit. He kind of looked like a drag queen that needs to have a gym membership. Now, I mean, he's kind of looked like one of the Black Beatles, had acid trip and some Slim Fast. I don't know. I don't know, but he was there. The people there were very nice. We're talking about, you know, I was able to pass some stuff around. But, and it was interesting. And you know what? That place was full of Greek letter people. Now, you know Greek letter people. Anyway.
What type of event was it?
Let me see. Hold on. Let me reach into my bag. You know I just put the thing in my bag. I mean, I was just there to push Depo Provera. I like the head of man for DC. He's a wonderful person. His name is Reverend Abrego. Beautiful person, beautiful wife. It's an action and authority reception.
Mm-hmm.
And they will honor three women. Since this is your show, I'm going to bring this up. Isn't that nice? Cornelia Brown, President of the Afield Randolph Institute. Melanie Campbell, President of the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation. And Joyanne Reed, Managing Editor of The Griot. Hello?
Okay.
And that's big honors to them. Melanie was nice. Cleola Brown was cool. I didn't get to meet the sister from The Griot, but I could tell something, and I just waited. That came out, too. You know, The Griot, which is wonderful, but sometimes The Griot is a little conservative. Have you ever noticed that? It doesn't go too far?
That puts it mildly.
Okay, well, let me share with you why. I knew this. I knew that. That's why I barely read The Griot. No disrespect. Joyanne Reed is Trinidadian. Oh, Guyanese. I'm sorry, Guyanese. And so when you see this stuff that's almost black but don't go far enough, it's almost always one black from another country. Yeah, y'all like that. If they don't want me to say that, then get radical. They might call me Ture if you don't want me to dog you. If we were over in their country singing God Bless America and you need those bases and prostitution for the Marines is economic growth, they'd be quite angry with us. They'd be calling us Yankee, which they do call us. Now, when you come to my country and do the same thing, how am I supposed to feel? And, by the way, white folks don't want there to be an evolution of an African-American identity, nor do blacks from other countries, because when they get jobs off of the movement and the struggle, and they also help to suppress and destroy things, which happened in all the black studies departments when they want to destroy consciousness in this country. Don't believe me. Who's the brother that started Kwanzaa? Dr. Ron Karenga. He documented it. When they wanted to shut down African-American consciousness, they filled those departments with Africans and Caribbeans who drove out the African-American folks who would have been the intellectual elite to advance the struggle. There's nowhere in the world where African Americans have gone in and destroyed the struggle for freedom among people of African descent, with the exception of the CIA agents in Ghana. And that's happened now because a whole bunch of black folks were supporting Nkrumah. So, I mean, that's the only place I can point to, and that was a short period of time. There wasn't that many of them. At the same time, it was a black woman CIA agent named Sharon Scranich, who was having an affair with Rawlings' cousin, who snitched out all the CIA operations, and that's how they would kill all their snitches and traitors, because the sister loved the way that Ghanaian brother laid pipe, and she loved Africa. And Sharon Scranich, and she snitched out all the spies, blacknecks, and traitors. That's why Ghana is one of the most stable people in Africa, because they got rid of their sellouts, because there was a sister who love brothers. Isn't it nice when black men and black women get together? Hey,
you know that's right.
Even Holy Spirit and some other things there, too. Get our juices rolling. Just think about it. Now,
Are you understand what I'm saying? And I know that folks are
absolutely
right. They're all dividing us. Do you hear me saying that they're not my brothers and sisters? Do you hear me
mm-hmm.
saying that
mm-hmm.
I can't work with them? You know, when I go down south, and I'm a southerner, when I go to Tennessee, they considered me, I may as well be from New York City. There are regional differences between African Americans in this country. So, but they're still African American, you know, but there's a difference. I mean, you go down south, I mean, don't tell someone. If you see a booger hanging out their nose, don't tell them. They'll take it as a criticism. You now, up north, you can say, you know, there's a booger hanging out your nose, here's a tissue. Down south, they'll take it as a put down. Man, you never say anything nice. Because of the inferiority complex, in some ways, is stronger in the south about black on black criticism. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
There may be a little
right.
more solidarity on a certain level in the south, and then in other areas, not. Down south, you go to church, you don't do nothing. Up north, there's a chance if you go to church that they raise a little hell. Do you follow what I'm saying? That there are differences within our own people. So we should be able to deal with this because when you understand differences, you can do translations. You know, one time I had a chance, the very first meeting on Afro-Latins, Brazil and South America, I was a Portuguese translator for the Congressional Black Caucus.
Okay.
And because I'd been to Brazil, I was able to, you know, translate, traduzir as palavras
mm-hmm.
em português, not em inglês, para meus irmãos e irmãs aqui nos Estados Unidos, right? I was able to break it down to
mm-hmm.
the brothers and sisters here about what was happening there. If you
mm-hmm.
can
mm-hmm.
see different cultures, difference doesn't stop it. Differences give you
mm-hmm.
the innovation to bring it together. You understand what I'm saying? And
absolutely.
So this obsessive fake Pan-Africanist idea that if we just argue that everything's synonymous, it's not helpful. Instead,
mm-hmm.
let's find ways where there is a variation to bring unity there versus saying, well, we're all the same thing. Because I'm going to tell
mm-hmm.
you something right now. If you tell a black person in the United States, like I'll give you an example. When Darfur was going on, we couldn't get Sudanese. We couldn't find Sudanese that would support us to end genocide against their own people because they didn't want to go back
right.
home. They wouldn't even think it'll be seen anywhere near it, which means, okay, that's deep. With their families being attacked and killed, they weren't willing to do anything because they were so happy to be in America. On the other hand, African Americans who were so disgusted at imperialism and racism, they were happy to go out and curse out anybody. Do you follow what I'm saying? They wanted to go after the White House, and this time the White House isn't involved directly. This is something you have to go to the Sudanese embassy for. Do you follow
right.
what I'm saying? So
right.
a lot of them can be very, very, very reactionary because America's the land of dreams until
mm-hmm.
you don't get that medical
mm-hmm.
care and that check at the contractor and and that voice saying, they're treating me like I'm a black American. They're treating me like a black American. So, no, I'm not laughing at that, but, you know, and the family, have you heard they've given all of this, how sorry they feel for the victims? Because you know he shot a lot of white people. Because if it had been black people, they would have said, Aaron Alexis killed his own people. They haven't
mm-hmm.
said that yet.
That's,
right. Think about that. And they're still mad. Have you noticed they went after Obama and said Obama wasn't mean enough? So you know it was a bunch
mm-hmm.
of white people who reacted saying Obama was too kind. By the way, you know what? It's kind of true because Obama's harder on African Americans than he was on this dude that shot those white people at the Navy Yard. Last but not
mm-hmm.
least, I need to remind people. The massacre took place in Anacostia. The Anacostia were a kingdom of people, a subset of the Piscataqua people that lived on the Potomac River, which means the place of many fish. Okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
John came up and killed those folks. By the way, this dude, this is the first time that so many whites have been harmed by someone non-white in like 500 years. So they need to get over it. I'm sorry it happened. I feel sorry, remorse that these people got hurt. But you know what? When that tribe of people that happened to be my grandmother's, great-grandmother's people got wiped out, it's not even in the history book. So right now I'm walking around saying, now y'all know how this feel then. I'm done.
Wow.
I know folks will be mad out there. Ooh, he's saying it's good. Did you ever hear me say it was good and we got hurt? No.
Of course not. And, you know, the reality is, my brother, we keep it very real here at New Day. So, you know, commentaries and thoughts and so forth are always welcome if they're, you know, relatively accurate, factual, and poignant. So, by all means.
And by the way, while we have everybody worked up over this, heard that the Libyan government is asking for America and England to send troops in, let me clarify what that means. The black people have risen up against these bastard Wahhabi sellout Obama, Cameron, Brother Sconi, Sarkozy, fraudy Arabian, Scrutari terrorists who've been killing folks. Now they're asking for white folks to come in and kill the people with their better weapons because they're losing control. And they're not saying it quite like that. They're saying, you know, we aren't pumping out enough oil because of instability. Translation, y'all not getting all the oil that you want to steal because the niggas here are off the chain. You didn't promise us. You promised us that we would have had control over the darkies by now. So some of those soldiers that were on their way to Syria that are over in Gibraltar, in Malta, and in other places, maybe in Libya real soon, killing real black people, and all of you Obama apologists. In fact, I said that Negroes, they could make going to a concentration camp a festive occasion if there were good rims on the truck taking them. Ooh, they got spinning rims on the trucks taking us to our death, really? Well, I would have rather had white walls. You know, this is a white country. Yeah, you got a point there. You know, mediocre black dummy talk, dummy speak, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I start saying LeBron James going to make $100 million this year. You know, the thing that disgusts me the most is black men talking about how much money athletes who hate them, who don't want nothing to do with them, how much they're going to make. He's going to start with $30 million, guaranteed, and it still don't got 5 cents. Have you ever noticed that? This dude ain't paying no child support, and he's talking about, you know, about some sports star, how he's going to pay child support when his wife's going to, he's going to have to pay her $16,000 a week. And this brother can't come up he can't come up with 15 cents a month. You know, come on, brothers. Forgive me. Maybe I grew up in the white neighborhood, ruined me, but damn. Please, I don't want to go to another barbershop and hear ignorant black men who could come together and create some economy for themselves talk about these high-priced stars who end up, there's a good documentary, you can see it on Netflix, it's called Broke. They get these Jewish agents, yes, I said it, Jewish, or should I say Khazarians. They steal all the money. These guys, they're so strange. Why do you go to a stripper joint and throw out $50,000 at a woman that you don't even want to be with, and you're throwing it to impress the other dude? Are you interested in him? Seems like you should just show him your billfold instead of throwing it at the stripper. I'm just curious. I mean, inquiring minds want to know. So, you know, that this, you know, haven't you seen that since? I mean, this, these brothers, they're talking about everything. They're talking about how many records Jay-Z has sold or how much money he and Beyonce have. And notice, Beyonce is acting like a tramp so much until white folk are grabbing her like she's a wench. It's about time she found out all that shaking. That ain't getting you no respect. And a hoe is a hoe, whether they got 100 million.
Didn't that just recently happen where Brazil?
It doesn't matter. She acting like a little hoe. Doesn't she realize in Brazil when she shakes like that, they're thinking about that prostitute queen, Chica da Silva, the black woman who held her way to being queen of Brazil?
Yeah.
That's not honorable. That's not honorable. And, you know, and her idol is Tina Turner, who used to be gay. Now she's with the white dude. I guess that's an improvement. Then again, I'm wondering if a black dude beating her up, keeping her in touch with her blackness. No, I don't agree with that. Or the white dude who's going to get all her money when she dies. Why is he going to do something to Tina Turner? She's in the hospital. She's going to have an oxygen bubble or something. And that white dude will have all that money.
What love got to do with it? Trust me. If she was with him all these years, it took her this long at her age to decide to marry him, and, you know, he's going to be very nice. Hi, Tina. I love you, Tina. God, where are the pills? You know. Okay. And then, Tina, I've got some, you know. If Tina Turner suddenly dies next 2 or 3 years, remember I told you about that? That dude, and then Switzerland, you know they're going to give him a number to count. He probably already has. They're going to take all of her money. And you know what? She won't be proud Mary when he take off her money. I mean, you know, and talking about a fool in love, it wasn't her and Ike, but it's her and this white dude. Like, what, 30 years younger than her? What's up with black people? Anyway, I'm sorry. I just wanted to go into pop culture for a second, but I also want to tell people this is Congressional Black Caucus Week.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, it is.
Yeah. A confused black circus because, you know they're going to have all these workshops and all these folks have parties and other. You know, their big thing is a fashion show. And I forget the big, there's a big transvestite type dude named Harvey that used to do the fashion show. He looked like Jabba the Hutt with the colors, I mean, like the colors of Pendleton. You know what I'm saying? So the Congressional Black Caucus, you got all these black folks in Congress. And what do they have to show for it? I was this man, Reverend Anthony, and he was just talking to these people that Obama's only met with the Congressional Black Caucus like once in the last 4 years.
What?
And these people were trying to defend him. And I said, you know what? You know, the Congressional Black Caucus is less effective than Adam Clayton Powell with his zip route running after white secretaries. By himself, that dude was just getting stuff passed. Now, I'll just be honest with you. With all the pedophiles and freaks in D.C., all they need to do is find out who's messing with kids, get their names, and get some legislation. I mean, we would be rid of the criminal injustice system, or at least I'd have some modifications because I have some suspicions about who the child molesters are. I said, you know what, you're gonna co-sponsor my deal. When they co-sponsor, you usually know some stuff about them, you know? If you wonder why you get these strange
covering. And you know what, on that note, do you all realize that's really politics? That's how stuff is really done. That bogus stuff
is
one part of it.
Everybody knows that people, all these people down here are freaks. By the way, I got to put this out here. I know you like Michael Eric Dyson, right?
Are you talking to me?
I know he's married, but, you know, I've never seen him in an environment where he is not trying to talk to every single solitary black woman that he sees. I'm thinking, you know, and his wife's a reverend, you know. I wonder if that's some more, what's that woman's name? Bynum, Juanita Bynum story. If she come up with a book or something, you know, you heard this on New Day, too. I'm just thinking, brother, you're not supposed to be vibing with all these different women in there. You know, like a McDonald's commercial, but you can't do it all, and he's trying. And you know, when you see him, like, when you see him on TV, he looks more impressive. But I saw him there, he looked like the average dude that's at the club trying to, like, get a hookup. That's how it looks. I'm not saying that that's all that's there to him. That's not what I'm saying. I'm only saying that, dude, I mean, he has to be my age, approaching 50-something. You know... Remember, come on, what's his name? Nelson Rockefeller. Remember he died on top of his secretary? And they didn't want to talk about it? I mean, old man, you need to leave some of these young women alone. They don't got enough for them. In fact, that's what took Isaac Hayes' ass out of here, is taking that Viagra trying to screw a woman that he's old enough to be her great-grandpappy. You know, you need to pick a woman close at me. I could see a 15 or 20-year. Why do people need a 30-year? 40-year disparity between that. Come on. You're not going to rediscover youth. And I don't care what no man thinks or no man says. Your ding-a-ling will wear out like a tire at some point. I mean, it's not going to be the same when you're 60 or 70 as when you were 18. That's why you're a hoe when you're young. At some point, you should be, and that's the point I was going to make on brothers. At some point,
you should have gotten enough of whatever it was you were trying to get to be able to be a pillar of the community instead of a competitor with the young boys over the new stuff coming on the block.
And that's speaking
truth to power. All these old congressmen, they probably all have pacemakers. The white people have a little code, turn their stuff off if they start sound like Malcolm X. And they also, this is something, I don't know if they have anymore, but they used to have a black caucus orgy for important people. Yeah, this is what your black leadership is doing, hoeing. As if sex is new. You know, I wrote an article when I was a student at Howard, and I said, you could do tricks before you got to school. You could smoke blunts without coming to the university. You could get an STD in high school. Why don't we ever do a little bit more? You know how white guys, they could be the biggest queens or whatever, but they get something done. Negroes just wobble, hey, I'm 75, I had sex. Really? You should have had it 50, 60 years ago, idiot. Now, what are you doing that's relative to your age? Like when you go out and you see Negro, old black folk, trying to get down with hip-hop on the walk. It doesn't look right. I mean, they got on Kangol hats in the 80s. I mean, and they have it on backwards because they can't read the hat. So, you know, be your age. We need the older elders to act like people who've gotten some sense in the last 80 years. So at the caucus, you'd see all these people, you know, and then, you know, telling these young women, I could still cut the mustard. First of all, they don't even understand what you mean by cut the mustard. And most folks like salsa. What's mustard? I think he's talking about hamburgers. Bye, sir. You know, So I wish policy came out of this Congressional Black Caucus thing. I wish there'd be a resolution that we're going to vote for Obama to be impeached if he starts another war and doesn't bail out Detroit and doesn't stop people from taking pensions. Don't you think something like this would come out of the Congressional Black Caucus? You know, instead of, you know, because they have it every year, and it's interesting. You want to know who gives the money? You bet you. If it's a company that dogs black people, they're paying for everything. The Adolf Hitler Foundation is having the Soul Food Festival. You know, and the napkins say, I hate you, nigga. Ooh, napkins, these are nice, they're important. And nobody's, it's almost that bad. You know, Coors, all these crazy racist groups sponsor stuff. And black people, all they can see is this free food, like Coca-Cola, that are killing folks and stealing people's land in Belize and other stuff. I'm like, man, free Coke, so I'm going to take a couple, you know. So that's what's going on in D.C. No, there's nobody at the wheel of the state of black people. No one's saying in 15 years we're going to get rid of these problems. This is our 15-year plan. That is not what's happening. Isn't that, so each year they have a Congressional Black Caucus and people like Budweiser and Coors, and you know they hate black people. And they'll sponsor stuff. And see, I don't mind getting the money, but the Negroes act like they can't speak up to these people. Now, isn't it something that you can raise a black child and take care of them and they can start sashing you by the time they're 3 or 4? But little white corporation give a black politician money, and they'll never talk back. Never any attitude. I mean, this, you know, you can give me, I'll take some money, but I mean, eventually going to tell you to go to hell.
That's right.
Something to wrong too. You get what I'm saying?
So sure.
All these people, I hope y'all come to the Congressional Black Caucus, and I hope somebody's doing something intelligent. And let me share with you how stupid the people in the Black Caucus. You wonder why I'm cussing them out. And I feel like, you know, and blacknecks make me just feel like cussing. I don't go to church because I don't want no blackneck having me cussing in church. I can't even be a Christian. I can't even live for God being around blacknecks. It just makes me feel so crazy. You know, they're just despicable people. Do you know they're having this big thing on Africa on Friday? And guess who one of the sponsors and one of the featured guests is for the event? Dictator for life, Campoare, who murdered Sankara, is one of the guests. They're honoring him. And I just think, Jesus, I can't go to there because I may, you know, I may feel some James Earl Ray virus jumping me or Sister Anne Sirhan, you know, just for my brother. You know, Sankara is a Fulani. That's my ethnic group. This dude shot down one of the greatest people ever emerged among my DNA strand. And these niggas are honoring him. And you know what? It's the woman. Her name is Bass. They need to drop the first letter. From California. Who she look like? I'm trying to think. She looked like Dr. Doolittle with took some pills to make him darker with some glasses and got a sex change. I mean, this woman gets all the money from Emily's List that was started by the woman named Helen Malcolm. She's the lesbian that gives all the money. You have to want to kill babies and support gay stuff, and then you get money to go to Congress. And this is a sister that's on the Africa Committee, okay? And, by the way, she's one of those people that doesn't want to say anything about Defo Provera because she gets money from Planned Parenthood. By the way, came up. Tonight, I'm going to give y'all a name. Y'all don't know who he is, but let me dog him because this brother works for the Leadership Council on Civil Rights. And I stopped him to talk to him about Defo Provera. And I could see that this brother was annoyed at first, but I pressed it. And so I gave him, I said, you need to see my literature. And he looked at this and said, this is pro-life. Like that was bad. And I says, yes, I'm anti-AIDS, I'm anti-cancer, I'm anti-heart attack, stroke, diabetes, and osteoporosis. Do you have a problem with that? Does it have to be something that does this to our sisters? And he says, we don't cover that. I says, exactly. And when we expose you for not taking a stand to stop genocide against our sisters, how are you going to look?
What was his response?
Well, he began to put his head down. By the way, this is how it is in D.C., y'all. Anybody that stands up for black people that won't bow down, they begin to treat you like you're crazy. If you read Randall Robinson's book about leaving America, he talks about a thing called the degenerative Vernon Jordan disease. This nigga had that because everything I told him was true. In his heart, he knew I was telling him the truth. I wasn't asking him to hate anybody or firebomb anything or do anything radical. I was saying, understand that this is bad for our women. It's killing us. And he began to tell me about their funding. And I said to him, brother, so what happens when the Nazis fund you? And so he says, paused and he says, well, look, I said, well, do you have a card? He says, I don't have any cards. He says, well, can you write your email down? Well, I have your form. I says, I'd like your email. He says, so you think I won't email you? I said, I'd like to have your email. And then he says, look, I work for them. I'll read your report, brother. In other words, I know you're right. I know everything you're saying you're going to be able to prove is true, but I need this job. So what happens when the jobs mean that they come to get the rest of us?
Wow.
I mean, I'm the monster for thinking our sisters shouldn't have AIDS, shouldn't be sterilized, shouldn't have heart attack, stroke, ectopic pregnancy, shouldn't have chlamydia, shouldn't have suicidal ideation, shouldn't have osteoporosis, shouldn't be permanently sterilized, shouldn't have anemia, shouldn't have bipolar disorder or migraine headaches with withdrawal. I'm militant and pro-life for that. Blacks, do you see what I'm saying? We need a civil war. And I'm telling you, a war without mercy against black necks. For me to be the bad person, I could see if I said no birth control at all. I said, what's wrong with low-dose birth control pills? You guys talk about equality. That's what white women use. Why aren't we using what the white women use? Since white is the standard.
And he's not going to give me an answer. And I didn't even get into the fact, I know that y'all got $2 million from Merck back in November. They're the ones making Gardasil. That's killing our sisters, so I didn't do that. But but they all agree, the NAACP and all of them are in on the destruction of the black woman. And that's why there's so many, and they don't mind destroying black women. However, did they ever realize that you can't have sex with little boys if they're not women to make babies that become boys? Black and Khazar pedophiles in high places. Hint, hint. I'm talking about somebody out there. I know I'm making someone mad, and I don't care. Satan, I rebuke you. Resist the devil, a.k.a. in our community, the devil should be black next, and the devil will flee from you. So get out our face. Stop being our leadership. Stop taking policy jobs to betray our community. Pro-life.
Right.
Made it seem as if I thought it was wrong. We, you know, they're wiping us out, and pro-life, like I had exposed myself to it. This is D.C. This is why Howard University had Lee Atwater on the board until the students rose up. This is why Howard had Ken Lay from Enron, who stole billions, on the board of Howard. And they wonder why Howard's going broke now. Blacknecks. Everywhere.
You know, I was just, I'm in the chat room right now. And, of course, folks, we want to remind you that the chat room is open. And our sister EI is there. And we were just chatting a little bit about, you know, the different things that have been going on over the years with the African American Studies Department. And one of the things that I just said to Sister EI was, in reality, we need our own. We need our own colleges and universities. This stuff, this historically black university college thing, we need to get over that.
Yeah, well, you know, the black colleges, as I told people, this is my comment. Use this on black folks. Not being stupid, okay? This is what I say to them. I asked them, if AIDS was the only thing that you had on it. Usually Negroes pause. That's how sick we are. We're so into materialism and possessions until we don't say, no, I'd rather have nothing than have AIDS. But most Negroes will pause. Because I don't want to be without nothing, because being African and American is not enough. You need something to compensate for our inferiority complex about being Africans in America. So when you say not having things like the shoes that we kill each other over, or the rims, or the weaves, or some object, some bauble of this wicked society, seems to take some of the pain out of not being white here. So even when you confront them and say, if AIDS was all you had, would you still want it? Most Negroes pause.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
And it's the same thing for these HBCUs. If it's not doing what it's supposed to do, why would you still want it? I asked this woman today, if your man was cheating on you, and, you know, you had to keep worrying about going to get checkups. You know, in fact, you smell something on his breath and you don't like what you're smelling. Was my sister here? You know, you would get rid of him because he's not doing what he's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
You don't keep him. When do we reject stuff? We reject black folks of conscience. We reject a sister like Empress Phile, who's given a life for the movement. We'll reject Malcolm. We'll reject greatness. And we'll hold on to bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Every day. Every day.
And so, you know, something's got to come along. So all I can say, the HBCUs, let me tell you something. Someone's going to fix HBCUs. It's just a matter of time. You see, white folks are so mad at Obama. You know, Newt Gingrich has a plan to take away Howard's $200 million appropriation and give it to all the other HBCUs. It's a great divide.
Mm.
which means if he spreads among all the schools, Howard will have to change. All the schools will have to change. And Howard,
wow.
If they put their money away, whoo, the folks up there couldn't steal. And by the way, they wouldn't have as much money for all those sexual harassment suits. I mean, when they say, oh, Howard, it should be, ho, Howard. While I'm on here, that Negro from Philadelphia, Patrick Swigert from South Philly,
mm-hmm,
the Zionist,
mm-hmm,
you know he left, mm-hmm, Howard because he was bothering men. Some dude who, that's why he had to go.
Mm-hmm.
I put that out there. Mm-hmm. So just to let you know that everything that come down from Philly is radical. That's some reactionary stuff there. And I had to tell that brother back in 1997, because this brother, whew, remember the Sugar Smacks commercial, the frog that would say, dig him? Whereas you can't dig Swigert. I told Swigert, you know, I think you're okay present, but you need to stop taking publicity photos. That's as close as I can come to town. Man, ugly, man. You're scaring people, you know. Put a building up. Why put your face up there? It's a still a Negro who wants to be beautiful when he looks like a mulatto Urkel with Down syndrome. You know, what's up with that? So, yes, this is what these folks do. They get into Congress or they become college presidents, and then they become whores. And they feel obligated to sleep with people's children and folks' husbands and wives. And you can't have a job if you don't screw someone on staff. Oh,
mm-hmm,
you think I'm lying? This happened to one of the coaches at Lane College where I used to work. The president of the school wanted, allegedly, this is what's been filed in court, demanded to have sex with one of the coach's wives, and when the wife refused, he fired the man from his job. This is what they do at so-called institutions of higher learning. Now, I guess that higher must be marijuana or drug influence, because it's not good sense and it's not morality. And Lane is supposedly a Christian college. Or maybe it's one of those white, a pedophile-sounding father Christianities, you know. Yes, I said it. And no, I don't want to work there. They can have it. You know what I'm saying? And I would call them the effing fathers instead of founding, because that's the only F that they would be having.
Oh,
now,
yes,
I hope I set this board up. I hope somebody's pissed off or someone's laughing. I mean, I wish I could at least, you know, that's the only thing about being on the radio is you don't know what people's response is. Are they
listening? Let us do this. Let us open up the lines. And my listening family, if you have a comment or a question tonight to address anything we've talked about thus far, please feel free to push one now, and we will certainly entertain or bring in your question or comment. We're talking, of course, with Dr. Randy Short, Brother Randy, who is always very candid and straightforward all of that and the bag of chips, as they say. So we are bringing you some, you know, dialogue tonight that kind of focuses on several topics. But, of course, as this being one of the forums for the Black Women's Power session, one of the things we, of course, want to talk about is politics. And because this forum also goes to or lends to the development of the Black Women's political convention that will be coming up next year, then, of course, again, we really need to be clear about what really goes on in the so-called political arena. You know, those of us who have had some experience in kind of, you know, being made privy to some of the shenanigans that goes on, well, we're sharing some of that with you. And I can tell you, it is so important that you go in with your eyes open, because once you go in and see what's going on, it can be quite shocking, quite shocking. So there are reasons why certain things don't get done in our communities. We vote people in, but a lot of times you have no idea what we're voting them really into. It's more than just sitting in meetings and so forth and so on. There's a whole social behavior thing that goes with the political arena. And if we're going to prepare our people to go into these offices in the future, then we need to be clear on what we're talking about and how we can better safeguard our interests. Let's put it that way. And lastly, I remember a few years ago when we had this dialogue about folks entering into the political arena, one of the things that was said in that dialogue, Brother Andy, was that where we failed in more recent time in helping folks to get into these political offices is that two things that we didn't do. One was to create a level, a real operational apparatus to hold them accountable, and also to make certain that they weren't up there by themselves. Those are two things that came out of the discussion, because once you start going into the various areas of politics that one has to engage in, if you're up there by yourself, meaning if you have some conscious level or some morals or some ethics, and you're up there by yourself, you're in trouble. These are some of the real things that are really going on in the so-called political arena. So, needless to say, we have a lot of work to do. Again, we open up the lines for you all. We have folks on the boards, but nobody's pushed one yet. So hopefully, again, if you have a question or a comment, we certainly welcome you to do so now. Go into the chat room and see if we have any questions over there. But, Brother Randy, please continue.
Well, you know, one of the things that I really hope comes out of the We Charge genocide effort that you have, I don't know if you're even aware of how significant it is that the time for this thing is so now, God knows it's now, that we're in such a bad spot where you've got people who think it's strange, it's robbery for you to want people to not to stand up against something like our sisters being poisoned. I mean, by the way, just seeing some other people that are saying no to genocide will make me feel better. Because when you go and you talk to someone and you're by yourself, you know, I resent sometimes having to be by myself or with just a handful of people when this isn't, you know, I don't even use Depo Provera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not about me, but it's about the sisters that I know. Why, you know, if I can feel solidarity with my sisters, what is up with these brothers and other sisters? Little nasty sisters, are you? Yeah, I'm talking about y'all. The ones that, you know, well, they didn't use it, so they don't care. Well, I didn't use it. Well, that they were stupid then. Why are we cold like that?
Right.
How come we don't feel anything when this happens? I mean, that's not normal to be able to turn or not feel something when your own sisters, this them being targeted, they didn't deserve to be targeted. There's nothing a black woman did that warranted being targeted. You know what I'm saying? Nothing.
Absolutely.
Nothing about a sister part of being targeted. That just that reason alone should motivate someone to say, you know what? You know what, brother, sister? I'm opposed to this because I could have been a girl. I'm glad I'm who I am. But, you know, most, you know, you don't know this. My parents wanted a boy and a girl, that was it. And they got a boy instead. Now, what if I had been a girl and they had put Depo Provera in me? You know, we brothers need to understand that coming out as men, it's just a flip of the card in nature determining what your sex is going to be. You understand how easily you could have been a female versus a male. And so we're I'm very happy to be a man. I feel solidarity because if I had been a female, a whole lot of this garbage out here that's outrageous would be happening to me.
Right.
That makes me angry thinking about it. What if the protein is switched?
then I would be the person begging for my booty all day long and disrespected and cussed out and have to worry about, you know, walking down the stairway and folk making cat calls. And not millionaires and eligible people, but, you know, low-life people making comments about my body. They can't even afford to get up in here and making noise in the street. And they wouldn't dare do that to other women in other groups. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, I did say it. Now, so we should sit down and think. We don't want people to talk to our mother like that or our sister like that.
Right,
but this
exactly.
Is
that's what I was thinking
sisters,
about.
Because we've been oppressed. We should realize that we don't want this for any of our women, none of our women. And by the way, a whole lot of black men out there, I know they beefing, and I'm balanced. If you want sisters to be sweet and old school and kind and unassuming, you've got to give them a protected environment where they can develop that kind of gentle femininity that we men crave. But if they have to be hell on wheels just to get to and from the corner store, they're trying to get some cherry coke, and everyone's trying to take the other cherry that they got, of course she's going to be a battle axe. Of course she's going to be evil. After she's been raped by all men she knows from the age of one day until she's 16, I hate black men too. I'd be mad the first time it happened. So a lot of women are a lot better women than I'd be. You do something to me once, that's it. We've got to protect our women and safeguard them so they don't get embittered, so they're not getting an abortion at 7 years old, and make the world so safe that we can have businesses and we can cooperate, and someone wants to have your baby versus being, what's that woman's name, Wilma Rudolph, running down to Planned Parenthood to kill the thing because they don't want to deal with another person like you. We need to create the kind of village where a woman can have dignity, where she doesn't have to force and be loud and wag her head and try to sexualize through everything because that's the only way they know how to make things work. We've got to protect and allow the kind of womanhood, the regalness that is inside of every black woman, if they had had the environment to let that develop naturally, that we love. We have to want that. We have to want that to, a brother will think twice about putting his hands on some sister because we'll get him, he'll be lucky if he gets to the police station.
No, that's
you
right.
Know, he won't want to come out. He won't go before the parole board because someone on the parole board will be holding his finger out like a gun, winking at him, we'll come out. They'll commit a crime or something so they can stay in jail. You know, we men have to protect a lot of our discomfort with our black women has a lot to do with us having not protected them, us having let black women have to almost be as hard as men to make it, and then we don't like them for the masculine trait. I mean, you can't get a both feet partner. You can't. Or you can't. That's how we say that here. You can't.
Like
man.
A double-edged sword.
Yeah, so we've got to defend and protect. You know, I remember there was a sister, it was late, it was a party, and we walked her home. She couldn't believe nobody's going to touch you, sister, I just don't want anybody to do anything. Her mind's blown, she's never had anyone black and male walk them home. They've gotten a sex and let her walk home. I mean, that's cold, brothers. You got the coochie, she still had to walk by herself. What if someone wanted seconds after they knew what you did? Now, are you hearing me? I mean, we're supposed to protect our women. And you know what? When women know they're protected and cared about, they end up wanting to defend the men that have their best interests at heart. Then we can get some of this Afrocentric Tammy Wynette. Even look at Zimmerman, his wife. She looked like Santa Claus with the razor shave, you know. Look at how loyal she was to that little piece of slime that she had. You know what?
Yes, indeed.
We need loyalty to the right kinds of black men.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have that once we recognize that part of being a man isn't so much your genitalia, how many inches you're packing. I mean, you're not a yardstick or tape measure. You're a person. Okay?
I could see if you had some salary, a per diem or something, for having so many of these inches or centimeters, whatever people use as a measure. But being a man is about having business, about looking out for family. It's about solidarity,
mm-hmm.
even some violence. It's great violence when you protect the woman from somebody that's no good. Do you know how good it feels when I'm fighting with these little white chemical companies and pharmaceuticals? I know that someone's probably going to jump off one of those buildings in a couple of days. And, you know, I'm going to save the picture on my desktop. So, yeah, I'll send it to you, Philly. Being a man is so much more than what we've truncated into of us being another layer of oppression of our own women.
Mm-hmm.
Because when our women are oppressed, they take it out on the young boys,
mm-hmm.
and we have a vicious cycle of hurting each other, generation after generation after generation after generation, and we men have to stop it. They can't meet a sister in the community that they can respect. They get another sister from the diaspora and start another black family and do it the right way. Vice versa, the sister can't find the brother, just everybody's grabbing themselves like Michael Jackson that didn't like kids, and all the kids then find someone else, get somebody from another culture that's black, and start another black family. Or, you know, don't go to the church where the choir's so gay and tell they have insurance policies for everybody that can sing in the church. Come on now. And they have a funeral twice a week. You know, don't go to that church looking. Don't run after a Muslim man that's already telling you he believes in having 7 and 8 wives. You know, pick somebody who's going to be nice to you and vice versa. This is the beginning. If we can get our family together, then we can get our culture together. If we can get culture together, then we can find things. We've done this before. We dishonor our ancestors and everything we've come from for us to not learn how to treat each other better. The old black spiritual, walk together, children, don't you get with me. It's so simple. Whether you're looking at the confessions and the Egyptian religion, the Beatitudes, the Ten Commandments, if you're looking at the Sunnah in Islam, it is not impossible for us to reach a point where we've got some respect and compassion for each other. And when we have that...
Mm-hmm.
Trust me, when you truly have community, like when you hear me talk about black women, you know I love my mama, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When you love your mother, when you love the women in your family, you, by extension, care about other women. And if you don't want someone to beat up on your mother, you don't want to touch anybody else's mother. If you love your cousins,
mm-hmm.
you don't want folks injecting stuff in them. I don't even care if I don't know who the person is. I don't like none of us getting injected with that. And brothers, we're there. In fact, so many black men who are looking for ways to express their manhood in sports, and will find that a big part of manhood is defending women and children. Sometimes
That's right.
We don't have 2 dimes. You don't have 2 pennies to rub together, but if you said, you know what, sister, I'm going to walk you home or I'll make certain this or do, you know, that gets you a lot of respect. You'd be amazed at how much goodwill when a sister sees a black man just being a good person. In fact, I've seen folks almost cry. They couldn't believe you didn't bother them for anything. You weren't trying to thug them. You follow what I'm saying? And the reason I'm
Absolutely.
Saying this is when my home got foreclosed on, which I paid the money. There was a sister,
mm-hmm.
an oldest, that I used to just go and do things for because I liked her. Do you know they took me to their home? I would have been homeless. But they saw, God, he respects me. It started with me. They had a pet chicken. A raccoon killed it. I found it, told them, you know that, I think your bird is 2 blocks from here. And they never forgot that I took the time to, and if I told you how much good came out of me just showing respect for this sister, these people are like family to me.
Mm-hmm.
We need to rediscover those connections. And maybe not everybody's ready, but it's almost like a maroon community. Everyone who wants to be free or has the potential to desire it
put your energy there. The very negative people, you know, well, some folks are going to commit suicide. They're going to drive drunk. They're going to do it. But the ones that can be brought into something that's beautiful, we should seek it out.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I mean, isn't that something? I mean, that woman, that family, those folks are still doing things for me over this chicken. We didn't even eat it. The raccoon did. And so, and can you imagine that? Now, what if I said, oh, that old bee, I ain't going to do nothing. She ain't nobody. I had no idea that that old house would be where I'd live for almost 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but she would smile, I would smile, we'd speak. Do you know that's how we made it for hundreds of years? Just showing some decency. There's a song Mahalia Jackson used to sing. It don't cost very much. When did we get too grand to speak or to care or take a neighbor something or knock on someone's door or do this or do that or do the other? The small things. Black men, all that kindness that I know that's there, that's hidden behind all the attitude, this, that, and the other, and black women, if we could put a little bit of that aside. I know, don't completely smile because we don't want all the idiots to try to come and get over. But anybody that's showing some decency, don't give them a lot of trust, but give them increments. And then you might find someone that's really cool or decent or caring. They're as afraid of the BS out here as you are. Okay, that's my take on that. We have the capacity. The riches inside of our people. If you've ever been to rural Africa, folk almost starving to death and they're trying to feed you.
Oh, yeah.
You compare that to the Americanized fake black neck. They weigh like 900 pounds on one of the scooters, and they got like a 60-pack of wings, and they're afraid you're going to get one. You know, they got the big, ugly cookie-cutter houses out in the suburbs, and nobody can stay with them. Oh, well, they've known you 50 years, and you come in from out of town. Well, why don't you stay in a white hotel that's segregated? Isn't that crazy? And they're like your first cousins. That's where the family reunion, you come all the way across the country, and they tell you, well, there's a Ramada Inn. The Arabs don't like black people, but the room's okay. And then you're like, what's, you know, God, maybe Planned Parenthood should have got some black people. With, you know, you know, please. Do you get what I'm trying to say? When you meet somebody, let's go to a restaurant where they won't serve us instead of eating at home. You know, well, if he loves me, he'll go into debt. You know the Negro making minimum wage. How's he going to take you to a $200 plate restaurant? And then if he sells drugs, you're going to say, he's a jailbird. A lot of sisters on some real idiotic stuff. We won't, you know, I'll do sisters another day. Don't think I'm going to drop kick you sisters. I'm going to get to y'all too. This is a brother. I'm going to kick brothers in the behind for a couple of minutes. I'm going to wear out my kneecap kicking brothers in the behind tonight.
Well, actually, we only have about 5 more minutes. And I want everyone to know, unfortunately, for the past half an hour, I, once again, have not been able to get back into our chat room, nor back to the boards. We've been having this freezing problem with the boards all evening. And for the past half an hour, when I said we opened up the lines for folks to call, well, right after that, the boards froze again. And I have
not been able
to get back in.
We're going to start saying Black Revolution. Then they're going to let all the calls come in. Black Revolution. Black minority rule. If we just say that a couple of times, they'll leave the phone call. We're going to shut him down. You know? You see,
I have not been able to get back to the boards. It will not let me in, and nor the chat room. So I'm totally frozen out of both areas for the moment.
Well, we're gonna charge this to the Veterans Affairs Division. They probably have some stories to tell us. You know what I'm saying? But
Absolutely.
You know, speaking of the triple threat, his Glock, his shotgun, and his AR-15. Now you know this guy went white boy all the way in Navy Yard. Jesus have mercy. Oh, Aaron, Jesus boy, you sure you want to us?
you know, Negroes just want a regular old, you know, handgun and stuff, but an AR-15, I mean, that's like, he went total Aryan white supremacy on them. I'm like, what is up with this? And a shotgun, too? He must have been watching Terminator, another film stolen from a black person. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Aaron, remember I'm telling you, he looked like he had a problem, like he had a dent in his head. His head has like a 120-degree angle somewhere, like the doctor had the forceps too hard or either they dropped him on the table. I was just saying, look at that boy's head. And the other thing they did the OJ effect. Some pictures, he was light-skinned. Other pictures, when they wanted to piss white people off, they made him look like Wesley Snipes' little brother. And I also wondered, what was that whole thing about the bald head look? You know, he didn't have a nice-shaped head, so he should have just kept his natural or something on there. In fact, maybe some dreads, but then again, he's in the military. And those hang glider ears, the dead giveaway. You know, a lot of black people don't have those big ears that look like they could be up as a satellite and all, sending you know, and beaming stuff back to Earth with them ears that boy had, you know. You know, he probably, you know, had like dog whistle ears where he could probably hear you talking about him like a block away. And then his ears and the dumb smile he had, and then the Asian friend. How many black folks get a job in an Asian restaurant? You know, Asians don't hire black people. I knew that he was not an African American because, you know, niggas said, duh, your portion's too small. I'm not serving this. You know, no African American.
Wait a minute now, Brother Ray. Back up, because let me tell you, it is true they do not hire in their restaurants. But let me tell you, in the hood, Asians hire black folks for their stores. You know why?
And they want them on the front line. You, when your homie come in, you die first for my store. I don't want to die for niggas because I have business here. It take care of itself. If you die, you're going to die anyway. You don't fight over something, you're dying, right? Niggas are killing each other. I'm racist, but you come by store, go figure. All right. I'm going to get in trouble for being a bigot now. But I've seen this stuff. It's not my fault. I didn't do it. I've never done anything to anybody Asian. I'm not mad at nobody. And, you know, Asian dudes don't like black men. We know why. And so that even that, I thought that was interesting. His roommate was an Asian dude. And then, you know, the Asian dude put him out when he got married. And, you know, I thought that was interesting, too. Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I would love to see what people are saying in the chat room. Like, can't
you know
see what people are saying.
He did not want that black dude around his wife. He in shower. Leave him in his shower. You're my wife. No black man for you. You might be Asian. All the animal you need, I got. Why to go? I can't compete with you black men in bed. It's okay for business. You know what I'm saying? You almost like white man, but you still black. My woman pay attention to you. She asked me about you. I can't compete. You gotta go. Move out. So something like that probably happened. See how he's crying, how he's the nicest person in the world. Why'd you put him out? You can't admit it. you know I'm on to something. And I hope Homeland Security is enjoying or Homeland Insecurity. Now, doesn't it feel good to laugh in spite of all the mess we're going through? We got to have a sense of humor. We got to have a sense of humor. Never lose that. Never lose that. You know, I would have gone crazy if I didn't have a sense of humor. These predominantly white environments and black neck environments. Jesus. As I said, it's hard to live for Christ around black necks. I told one of these little fake Christian ministers, they making me feel like one of those little communists that had all the preachers in jail. I didn't even know I had that spirit in me until I started talking to him. I said, you know, God, when he asked me, was I Muslim? I said, I'm going to consider that after talking to your silly ass. Yes. God, how in the same religion? How do we get into that? I need to switch or something. You know what I'm saying? So we...
I'm just, black necks, God, they're just too many of them. They're just, we need to crack down. Remember, we had folks afraid to have straight hair when black was beautiful. We need to get black back to beautiful and make all the people ashamed hide. By the way, like all these black stars don't want to be black and all this stuff and all these athletes, you know. I still miss the day when black people turned on Sammy Davis Jr.'s cocaine peddling so-and-so butt. And, you know, Candyman.
Yeah.
He was a Candyman. And, you know, all these, we used to tell people, we used to punish folks. We used to make folks. We used to laugh at people. Richard Pryor knew how to cuss gay people out. And said, I even did the same stuff. I'm still not joining y'all. I mean, it's, don't you miss that when black folks didn't care what other people thought? And Bill Cosby, I never liked him. He's related to me. And he looks like something that Jell-O is, almost same color, chocolate in it. He's from Philly, too. Talking about sellouts. Y'all got a lot of them up there. You know what? If Rizzo had ripped up Bill Cosby behind, he would know who he was. It's those people that don't have those little, remember the little ugly blue uniforms the Philly cops used to wear? I remember those.
I remember them all too well.
They need to go and I think they need to whip Bill Cosby's behind, show him he's still a Negro. And they need to beat up Clarence Thomas. I just wish we could resurrect some of those old racist South Philly cops and have them beat up all the black, body black, help them. Just sit back and say, well, tell them it's a free country. Wouldn't they get near behind me?
Well, family, unfortunately, we have come down to our last minute, and it has been, you know, this was one of our humor nights. I'm really glad for it because there's been so much just, you know, drama going on for quite a while now. You know, there's some things happening here in Philly. Of course, we've talked about it during the past few weeks with there being molestation in our community that we've begun to learn about. And so, you know, there's a bunch of stuff that's happening both local, nationally, and internationally. So I agree with you, brother. It's really a wonderful thing to be able to, you know, to laugh a little bit. And I'm sure you family have definitely had a few chuckles tonight because if you haven't guessed it, our brother definitely has beyond a sense of humor. But at any rate, we have come down to the last few minutes of our program for tonight. We're going to be back tomorrow night doing another special edition. This special edition, of course, was a tribute, of course, to Stephen Biko, amongst other things. But, you know, we always keep it holistic, and we cover a lot of different things all in one evening, and we shall continue to do so. Dr. Randy Short, I want to thank you once again, as usual. Before you leave, please remind folks about Friday.
Yes, Friday, September 20th, 3:30 p.m., on the Capitol campus, the Capitol of the United States, the Capitol Visitor Center, in the auditorium, we will be talking and having a hearing about Depo-Provera, the birth control shot, the genocide contraceptive drug without real choice being forced on our sisters, the drug that causes all sorts of birth defects and everything else. Please come through there, and if you want information, even if you can't come and you're in Philadelphia, my email, wrandyshort@gmail.com. I will send you an electronic report, and you can read for yourself that they're trying to kill off our sisters, and we've got to stop them. Help me stop them. We can stop these people if we all come together, reach out and touch somebody's hand and say, no more BS.
Okay. You're going too far now. You're going too far. You're going too far. You're starting to make people think about Kumbaya or something.
We're talking about Kumbaya to genocide. Gotta go. I guess I picked a Diana Ross song. I can't make nationalists happy talking about her. You know, well,
forget her.
Okay. I'm sorry.
No, Stanley, we've got to run. Hopefully, maybe tomorrow, Brother Randy, you can check to see, because you never know. They might do a streaming of the session.
Yeah,
you might want to look into that.
They're filming it.
Right.
They
okay.
Are filming
yeah.
It. So
yeah,
because
nowadays when things are happening, they do it right online and webcasting and all of that. But listen, we're down to our last minute. I want to thank Dr. Randy Schutt again for bringing us some really insightful kinds of things along with some humor. And I want to thank you all, family, as well. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, with another special edition of New Day Resurrection Liberation as we continue on with our edition specifically for the Black Women's Power Forum. I want to send a special salute out and thank you to Sister Ia. I was on her radio program today, so if you get a chance, go check it out. She's at www.blogtalkradio/Ia Ajua. And we'll be back tomorrow. Dr. Randy Schutt, thank you again. Family, we love you. We leave you as we oftentimes greet you in the spirit of Maat Hotep. And remember, Pomoja to the Shinda. Together we shall win. Talk to you. Peace, Brother Randy.
Peace.